Hi, it's Radhika Jones, Editor-in-Chief of Vanity Fair. As we gear up for award season, there's no better time to join us. By becoming a Vanity Fair subscriber, you'll gain exclusive access to our in-depth coverage of film, television, and the best of Hollywood. And that's just the beginning. Vanity Fair takes you inside the worlds of entertainment, culture, politics, and scandal, bringing you iconic images, era-defining stories, and much more. Get 15% off a year of digital access to Vanity Fair by visiting vanityfair.com and using promo code POD15 at checkout. That's vanityfair.com, promo code POD15, for 15% off a full year of insights and exclusive digital access. Subscribe now.
Hello and welcome to Little Gold Men, the podcast from Vanity Fair and Panoply that proves that award season is a year-round event. I am Katie Rich, the deputy editor of VanityFair.com, and I'm here with our film critic, Richard Lawson.
Hello.
And our senior writer, Joanna Robinson.
Hello.
We've lost Mike this week, but as you hear later, we have a special guest, David Sims of The Atlantic and the Blank Check podcast, which all three of us have been guests on, which is very exciting. Mm-hmm. He's here to talk about Steven Spielberg, which is what his current podcast series is about, and his effort toward an Oscar this year, because it's kind of a quiet period for Oscar related movies. Richard and Joanna, you guys covered Beauty and the Beast last week, which made a ton of money.
It sure did.
So therefore might be in the conversation. But kind of using this quiet period in film, we thought we'd talk about television, which Yay. Is the movies that come to our house.
Elegantly put.
We have had one Twitter follower ask us to talk about Feud, which we are going to do because the current episodes are kind of gearing up for the Oscars. And I don't know any TV show that's really focused so much on an Oscar ceremony.
It's a little surreal to watch, actually.
It's really
like, wait,
fun.
People talk about this than me?
Who else cares about what Lee Remick was doing at the Oscars in 1963? In the meantime, we wanted to cover Legion, which is a show that, Joanna, I think you know more about than basically anybody, and seemed like a good way to get in, not just to that show and what's interesting about it, but what's going on with TV dramas this year for the Emmys, which are notably absent of Game of Thrones, which is not going to start airing until July. Let's start, Joanna. What's up with Legion, and why is it worth the attention of people who are kind of looking for the next prestige TV thing to pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, nothing's ever going to be Game of Thrones. So let's just get that out of the way. But, you know, this is a short 8-episode season, and they've already greenlit season 2. This is from Noah Hawley, who did Fargo, and it's a loose sort of X-Men comics adaptation. Marvel's involved. Jeff Loeb's involved. But it's technically an FX property. And it is unlike any, I will promise you, you who are nursing your wounds from watching Iron Fist, possibly, unlike any comic book show that's on television. Noah Hawley set out to do an entirely like surreal, more surreal than Twin Peaks is what he promised, sort of series. And I think, you know, people who have watched might agree that he has delivered. As we record this, episode 7 is going to air tonight, which I have seen, and it is one of the craziest best hours of television I've seen in a long time. And then episode 8, the finale, airs next week. I really hope that people who either haven't seen the show or dropped out midway because it was too confusing catch back up and dip back in, because when I was at the TCAs earlier this year, an FX executive promised me, off the record, but I'm going to say it now, promised me that the series would come together, like, no matter how confusing it gets, Joanna, stick with it, it comes together. And it really, really has, in an amazing way. Huge, huge, great performances from Dan Stevens and Aubrey Plaza. And, you know, I think it's just a visually stunning, well-acted show that knows exactly what it is.
Richard, how much of Legion have you watched?
I watched 2 episodes and was like, it's not my cup of tea, but I think also knowing that it kind of comes together towards the end makes me curious to revisit it. I don't think that we should, you know, let TV treat us like this these days, which they do, which is like, no, just spend 7 hours with it and then it'll be good.
Yeah, you know, it's like something that a lot of shows ask of people too.
Increasingly. And I think, you know, that's a lot of Netflixy stuff. But no, I think that what I will say in Legion's favor is that I think Dan Stevens and Aubrey Plaza are great, and that it's, if nothing else, really visually interesting. Oh, and Jean Smart is good, you know.
Oh, man, Jean Smart.
Yeah.
Why didn't you say so?
Right? She's Noah Hawley's new muse, I guess.
Rachel Keller too, who's great. She was great on Fargo season two, and she's also great in this. And Bill Irwin gets to do some great clowning physical comedy as the season goes on. I agree with you, Richard. And I was particularly angry about that with Iron Fist in terms of people saying, well, wait till episode 10. I'm like, how dare you?
Yeah.
Do I have 10 hours to do this? I mean, I do because it's my job, but like other humans should not be subjected to this. With Legion, I would say it was like episode 5 where it started coming together, which is a little less egregious.
Yeah.
And I've been rewatching the earlier episodes, and it's one of those things that really does reward a rewatch. But once again, like, it's a good question. How dare TV do this to us? Like, mm-hmm. do we have time to just rewatch earlier episodes and now they make sense? But at least what Legion can offer through the confusion that is certainly not true of Iron Fist and a lot of other shows is something visually unlike anything else on television, which is why I think Legion might have a shot at some of those technical awards that Game of Thrones usually has on lock.
So the Emmy connection, I mean, when you look at like predictions on Gold Derby for best drama, like Legion's not on there, although at this point, who actually knows anything? But the technical categories, that's where Game of Thrones wins 15 Emmys. That's where that all happens. And there is a big opening there.
Yeah, exactly. I was sort of trying to figure out what kind of vacuum Game of Thrones is leaving. And it's a lot of technical categories. Obviously, best drama, which I agree. I don't think Legion has a shot there. Not a lot of acting awards. And then the writing and the directing award. I think it's won the last 2 years. And so, you know, with Legion, I think we could see a lot of that show up in the technical category. I don't think the technical categories are broken out by limited series versus drama, right? Isn't it all just one?
Ooh, that's a good question that I can look up.
Great, I will stall. I will say that if they're not segregated, then Feud could snap up that costume design award that usually goes to Michelle Clapton for Game of Thrones, because those costumes are just completely incredible. So, you know, it's a lot of the dramas that people are talking about right now are actually limited series. Feud, Big Little Lies. So those won't quite be in this competing in the same categories necessarily as Game of Thrones. But we've got some great shows coming up, like the last season of The Leftovers could maybe sneak in there. The Americans, which, you know, got its first real award season momentum last year, could sort of pick up even more steam this year.
Yeah, it does seem like The Americans' time is maybe coming.
Hope so. It's a great show. Richard, what other dramas are out there that you think might be in the running here?
I wonder if The Young Pope could do anything, you know? That show seemed sort of, people were divided on it, but I know people who stuck with it seem to really be into it. I really hope The Leftovers does something. I mean, I think last year was interesting. It really clicked finally with critics and became, I think, almost like the best reviewed show of the year in some senses, and written about in these very rapturous terms. So now that it has that season under its belt and is coming back for one final one, I wonder if it could maybe really solidify its place in the pantheon.
I feel like The Leftovers is even the more egregious example of what you were talking about, Richard, where it's like, just get through the first season and then it gets really good.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is a show that was co-created by Damon Lindelof, and he doesn't always know where he's going, even though he creates these fascinating worlds. So there's no guarantee that season 3 will be satisfying, but I'm holding out a lot of high hope.
I like to think it will be, only because season 2 was so assured and season 3 is a planned final season.
Right.
I always get really excited about early planned final seasons because it's like, we know what we're doing.
Well, that's what The Americans is doing too, right?
Yeah, but they're going through, so this is season 5 right now, and then they're doing season 6 as their final season. So it's not as early as like 3 and out.
Yeah.
Just with The Leftovers, which is, you know, severely underwatched, which is why it's 3 and out. But HBO gave them one more season to sort of wrap everything up.
I think because the reviews had been so strong.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks like the technical categories are divided between TV, movie, or limited series and a regular series. I mean, for me, the one to really step into the Game of Thrones void there is The Crown.
Oh, sure. Of course. Yeah.
Which is like so expensive and so beautifully done. And, you know, we talked about it a lot on this podcast, but I think has really stuck with people.
Yeah.
I wonder, do we know when season 2 is premiering?
No, I can't imagine they would bring season 2 before season 1 has its Emmys run, though. Season 1 premiered in like November of last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. But that's the other thing. The weird thing about the Emmys is like, will people remember The Crown by next Emmys? The Crown season 1 by next Emmys, you know what I mean? Or will it be sort of an award for season 2? I mean, I feel like that's what happened with like Mr. Robot or other things.
That happens a lot with Orange is the New Black, it seems.
Yeah.
The other one, will they remember Stranger Things, which does not seem to have gone anywhere, even though it premiered like 9 months ago.
That's so crazy. Yeah. So the nominations will be coming out.
Nominations come out in like early July.
A year from when the show premiered.
Yeah, Stranger Things, I think, literally premiered the same week as the Emmy nominations or something like that. And then wasn't eligible for those Emmys and will be coming back now.
Right.
Todd Vanderbilt over at Vox.com wrote this great piece about sort of why so many shows are premiering in April, which was the Game of Thrones premiere month historically, but Game of Thrones won't be back till the summer. And, you know, he pointed out that it had to do with Emmy qualification cutoff point.
Right.
And also just sort of because Game of Thrones had such success with that run, because it's like right at the tail end of qualifications and then it's fresh, you know, Battle of the Bastards or whatever is fresh in your mind by the time you're voting for the Emmy, that sort of thing. Like that was a recipe for success for Game of Thrones. So a lot of other shows are being thrown in there, like Fargo, The Leftovers, et cetera, et cetera. I am really excited for Carrie Coon with the final season of Leftovers and Fargo season 3. I think this could be a really big Emmy year for her.
One other thing that we're not talking about, because maybe this proves that memories are short, Westworld. HBO made Westworld.
Of course, yes.
Westworld. It was real expensive.
Westworld has got so snubbed at the Golden Globes, maybe because it was so fresh. A lot of people were really expecting like Tandy Newton at least to win.
Didn't she get a SAG nomination?
She got
it nominated, but she didn't win. And Hopkins didn't even get nominated, though. It was very like real world gut check about actually how popular Westworld is. Actually, it's like it seems popular on the internet, but it is maybe not as widespread popular as we think it is.
Speaking of HBO, I know it's a limited series, and we did already mention it, but Big Little Lies, I feel like.
Yeah.
It could be fun to have Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon and others at the Emmys.
You know? Well, and as I think Joe Reed, previous guest, has pointed out, that between Nicole Kidman, Reese Witherspoon, Shailene Woodley, and then Feud with Jessica Lange and Susan Sarandon, it's going to be like this insane battle in Best Actress in a Limited Series.
Yeah, that's going to be quite something. And I think that Big Little Lies deserves it. I think
good. Yeah.
You know, and I think that Jean-Marc Vallée directing all the episodes, David E. Kelley writing all the episodes, like it has a real sort of solid idea of itself. And so I would think that it will be recognized in those categories as well, not just for the acting.
Yeah.
Because it's so solidly made.
This is exactly the Oscar drama that we will see play out on Feud in the upcoming weeks. But this sort of idea that Bette Davis and Joan Crawford were co-leads in whatever happened to Baby Jane, probably if one of them had gone into the supporting category, they might have both won. You know, that's more complicated. We will get into it in future episodes.
Both been nominated, certainly.
Yeah. I wonder if any of these actresses who are definitely the lead on their show will dip into the supporting category, like maybe a Big Little Lies.
I can totally see Reese going lead and Nicole going supporting.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Shailene just gets like
just screwed.
Or but what about Laura Dern then?
Oh God, Laura Dern. She's so good on the show.
You know, so it's, you can't have Susan Sarandon, Jessica Lange, and Nicole Kidman and Reese Witherspoon in the same category. It's insane. I mean,
I
you might
you
get it, but
can.
I guess
don't know.
So.
I just kinda
don't know
happen.
How they'll pick. I don't know how they'll pick.
There is an ancient gay prophecy about that happening that we haven't told most people about, but
now the scales are lifted from our eyes.
I think Carrie Coon in Fargo season 3 to just sort of round it all out, maybe.
Oh, yeah,
I
Fargo.
Say without having seen a single minute of footage. So, and that's so interesting, because for so long it felt like it was the, you know, the big male anti-hero actors like Bryan Cranston and Jon Hamm and earlier James Gandolfini, et cetera, like battling it out for the Emmys. And now it feels like this is an actress's game. We're in an actress wave, at least as far as limited series goes.
A decade ago, it'd be like there are people like Kira Sedgwick and Holly Hunter who couldn't get acting roles, movie roles anymore, so they went to television, but none of those were really taken seriously awards-wise. And now, finally, we've caught up and been like, oh, okay, we can make these like prestige television, which when you watch Big Little Lies, it's crazy that it was ever thought to be like a man's game, because women, this is like a great place for women's stories. It's a great place for everyone's stories.
But now that the big movie stars are sweeping, and where do the Kira Sedgwicks go?
Where is it? What's Kira Sedgwick up to? I mean, Carrie Coon's still, getting his big one. Yeah, there you go. I don't know. I mean, like, it's still PTV for a little bit longer. It literally seems like there's room for everybody.
Kira Sedgwick did win for The Closer. She won a Golden Globe and an Emmy, and I think she won. Maybe she didn't. But I think you're right that it was like maybe this like default of like, that's a movie actress name I recognize. And now like,
yeah. And like the shows themselves weren't taken seriously the way that like Mad Men was.
Yes, absolutely. But now these Oscar, well, Holly Hunter is an Oscar winner, but like, you know, it's just, yeah, it's a different landscape entirely. You know, I remain fascinated to see what will step in to that Game of Thrones role. I think you're right, Katie, that The Crown has a really good shot there, especially if they get season 2 out close enough that it's in people's
memory. Season two debuts in like June,
right?
Which could be cool.
So get some Claire Foy action, some costuming action. Actually, I think that's Michelle Clapton again on The Crown. So never mind.
Yeah, it's Michelle Clapton will just never stop winning Emmys.
It's just a costume award for Michelle Clapton, no matter which way you slice it.
Yeah.
And next year we'll have possibly Amy Adams and Naomi Watts doing battle. Or although I think maybe Naomi Watts is actually a drama, not a limited series. But they both have TV things coming out. And doesn't Meryl Streep have a TV thing that she's doing?
Oh, I think she does.
Yeah. So yeah, Brave New World.
Yeah, and we're actually, as we kind of go into what's going to be Emmy's F word consideration season, like there's basically a whole other huge award season, like Oscar season that we've been covering that goes around the Emmys. So we'll be getting into a lot of that in the coming months. So there's a lot to talk about.
Mm-hmm. So start watching TV now, just as the weather's getting nice.
Oh my God, yeah. Stay inside. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I watched all Stranger Things in like 2 days because it was too hot to go outside. So it doesn't take long for the weather to go from being nice to oppressive. Just, meanwhile, Joanna and her year-round beautiful temperatures is like, whatever, guys, I watch TV all the time. Anyway.
Yeah, I know, you're so right. I need to move to a place with inclement weather so I can feel better about my TV watching habits.
More in a moment, but first we want to talk to you again about Tripod. It's an effort that we're doing all of this month with a bunch of other podcasts to ask you, our listeners, to tell a friend about a podcast that they will love. It doesn't have to be this podcast, but we'd love it if it were. We want you to think of a friend, your mom, anyone in your life that you care about who you think would like podcasts if they haven't heard of it, or about a podcast that they would love if they're just starting to get into it. So tell them about it in real life or on social media. And if they don't know how to download podcasts already, as you know, it's pretty easy. So show them how. Richard, you had a podcast that you wanted to tell people that you love.
Yeah, it's a podcast that's kind of a collaboration between WBUR, which is my hometown, Boston.
Of course.
One of the public radio stations there, and the New York Times, that takes modern love columns from the New York Times and pairs it with an actor actually chooses from a selection and then reads it, and they score it with music, and it's really good. It's poignant. It's funny. I found it really comforting in the days immediately after the election.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine.
Because it had nothing to do with news or anything.
Oh,
it was just kind of soothing. They have great readers. Emmy Rossum did a great one. David Oyelowo, I think, did one. So it's just like they have a good, interesting cast.
So when you're sick of thinking about politics and or the movie industry, which we always talk about, it seems like a good alternative.
Yeah, you can hear about like quirky real life romances and stuff.
Who doesn't like that? Yeah. So if you want to recommend Modern Love or Little Gold Men or anything else, tell people about it on Twitter, on social media, using the hashtag Tripod, which is T-R-Y pod. And thank you for spreading the word.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
So now we're joined in a special podcast crossover episode that presumably someone's been asking for along the way. Host of the Blank Check podcast, where Richard, Joanna, and I have all been guests, is David Sims.
Hi, everybody.
This is very exciting.
Thank you for having me.
I do assume that there's at least like one person who's listened to this show and Blank Check and is like, wow, they're all in one place.
They've been on Twitter.
There's been a tweet
the
or
tweets,
two.
The tweets are out there. So, David, we brought you on because right now, as people know, you're in the middle of the Steven Spielberg miniseries. Although the week that we're talking, you had an episode about the movie Blank Check, so the timing is weird.
Can you just roughly explain the premise? I know that like your co-host Griffin is the one who does it usually on
it's
your
true,
show.
True, he does. And it is not an easy premise
to
explain.
No, it's not. But the most simple way you can.
It's a movie podcast. We break down by directors. So we tackle director filmographies and we just do one episode per movie. And we like directors who have made movies that get them a quote-unquote blank check from Hollywood, like your M. Night Shyamalans, your James Camerons, where they have some big success and then they get to make whatever they want. And sometimes it's great and sometimes it's terrible.
Sometimes they bounce, baby.
Sometimes they bounce, baby.
That's one of your many catchphrases on that show.
It's a catchphrase every show. You've all been on it.
Yes, we all have.
So you know, you mentioned Shyamalan. You did a Cameron Crowe season.
Correct.
Which Vanilla Sky.
You did Vanilla Sky. We did a Wachowski season.
So for a lot of these filmmakers, they started out big and then have kind of diminishing returns.
Yeah.
They've had comebacks, you know, like Shyamalan actually.
Right.
Just
sometimes peaks and valleys.
But Spielberg, that's a pretty high plateau, let's say. I mean, you know, there's some variation in there, but that guy doesn't tend to bomb, you know.
No. In fact, I'm racking my brain to even think of his last.
I mean, the
like,
BFG.
Actual, the BFG was weirdly kind of a bomb.
Yeah.
And it'll be the final episode. It's you know, it's sort of
unless he makes a movie between that.
No, well, he's trying.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. We'll get to that. The more topical part of this is that he's making a Pentagon Papers movie. I don't remember is it called the Pentagon?
It's
Papers?
Called The Post.
The Post.
Right.
But I mean, one thing that we're focusing on as well, the idea is the big blank check he got was DreamWorks.
Right. So it's all the Post, like DreamWorks and on movies. You're not going back to like ET and stuff.
No, just because it's like 30 movies and we'd. It's a lot of Spielberg. I mean, it's already a lot of Spielberg, just starting with The Lost World, which is sort of the first. It doesn't matter. It's
and
technically
and it's
DreamWorks,
also, but it's not just DreamWorks, but it's post-Oscar Spielberg.
Exactly.
Which is really important because, I mean, you guys aren't talking about his early films, but I feel like the idea is that he spent a long time gunning for the Oscar. Oh. Like, he wanted that Best Picture win. He got it with Schindler's List. And then what happens when you have everything you ever wanted?
Which is what's interesting about him.
What are some of the Spielberg near misses at the Oscars? Like, Color Purple. Right. Doesn't that feel like a near miss?
Yeah,
what else?
That got nominated for like 10 Oscars, but not Best Director and lost every single one, I think. He had a lot of like the Oscars really like sort of almost pointedly snubbing him for a while. Empire of the Sun was a big miss for him.
Well, in the sense was that, you know, he's like the kids director. Like,
exactly.
You make Jaws.
They would pat
E.T.
him on the head.
Yeah.
I mean, there's the famous video of him being filmed because he thought he was about to find out that he got his first Best Director nomination for Jaws.
I cannot believe he let them film him. So
that there, and the tape exists. I believe it's on YouTube now. And he missed out. Fellini, Federico Fellini, got the special nom for Satyricon, I think. And I think on the video, someone's like, it's Fellini. They gave it to Fellini. Like you could see their outrage mounting.
Oh wow.
But so yeah, from those humble days of Oscar chasing, now
then he won two in the '90s.
He won two in the '90s. He won for Schindler's List. He won for Saving Private Ryan for Best Director,
which is the episode that you were on, Richard. Which I just want to plug, the Saving Private Ryan episode on Blake Chick is great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you.
Joanna was on our Minority Report episode,
which is another great one.
Which is not very Oscar-y at all.
No, but unfairly snubbed, I would say.
Alas.
Has he been nominated since Saving Private Ryan?
Was he as a director?
Yeah.
Was he not nominated for Bridge of Spies? He was. He was nominated for Best Picture for Bridge of Spies. For Lincoln.
Lincoln. Did he not get a Munich directing nod? No.
He got a picture. No, he did. You're right. He got a directing. IMDb is not well organized for
also
me to figure
Tintin,
this out.
Of course.
Obviously.
And War Horse.
I mean, War Horse got a Best Picture nod, which War Horse. Is madness.
Well, that's part of the thing that's interesting about it. If, you know, this is an Oscars podcast, right? Yep. If you want to talk Oscars, is like, I feel like now they're like, sure, hey, you know, War Horse, Bridge of Spies, these movies get the Best Picture nod.
Yeah.
They get maybe a few other nods. But they almost sort of are like, well, you're fine, right, Steve? We don't need to give you much attention, right? Yeah, exactly.
You know you're loved.
And it's especially with Bridge of Spies, which is such an Oscar movie, like critically respected. It was sort of a surprise hit. Had Tom Hanks in it, for crying out loud. And I don't know. The Oscars, they gave it one trophy. You know, they sort of gave it a pat on the head. And it's interesting how far away they've gone from the 90s Oscars vibe.
Yeah.
But they gave the right trophy, I would say. Like, right, if you were going to give, you know, that film was so stolid, I guess is the word I would use. But like, you know, Mark Rylance is a genius. And so they're like, here's your genius award, Mark Rylance. Sorry, Sylvester Stallone.
Yeah.
But it's so funny because people watching from the, I get more feedback from people who aren't theater goers, who don't know Mark Rylance, are still really mad about the Sylvester Stallone snub because, I don't know, they didn't see Bridge of Spies, or if they did, they didn't see anything special in that performance. And to them, it feels like that sort of same break between popular entertainment and, you know, stolid old world Hollywood stuff is like the way that Spielberg couldn't break through with genre like Jaws. They're like, well, you're not going to give Creed the respect it deserves. No respect.
Oh, the cycle continues.
It is crazy that he lost for Creed. Like, if you think about it.
No.
It's crazy.
It was, I think we're a pro-Rylance podcast right
Absolutely.
Here now, so.
I mean, I would have been happy with either.
Yeah.
Rylance, it's a wonderful performance.
Well, the word is that Stallone is not very well liked in the industry.
No. He's a bit of a tough cookie.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
So, all right. So Spielberg's going to be back with Pentagon Papers.
The Post.
Okay. Sorry. I'm calling it the Pentagon Papers. Sure. So Steven Spielberg, it's starring Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep. It's about publication of the Pentagon Papers at the Washington Post. And it's about, I guess, Ben Bradley, who's Hanks is going to play, and Katherine Graham, Katie Graham, whatever they called her, deciding to publish them. So it's kind of everything. Like, it's so Oscar on paper that it makes me worry there's a catch somewhere.
Well, and hasn't that sort of, I mean, I guess that's sort of what I was saying about Bridge of Spies, because it used to be, and The Good Shepherd, which is not Spielberg, but had that same vibe, just sort of felt, where it was like, what's your early Oscar favorite this year? I don't know. Spielberg's making something with Tom Hanks. That looks good. The Pentagon, so it's about press freedom. It's got Meryl Streep in it. But this is something that he's working on Ready Player One, right? That's in post-production.
Which we talked about on our Oscars episode a couple weeks ago with Joe Reed, and it has since been moved back out of this year. So just if you're wondering for your little Goldman continuity, it's not coming out.
They pushed it to March because they're apparently afraid of clashing with Star Wars.
They should be. That makes a lot of sense.
What's Star Wars?
It's this up and coming nerd series.
Do you have possibly 30 episodes about the Star Wars franchise? Blank Check started as a Star Wars podcast.
Star Wars prequels podcast.
Yeah, just what the world
with the kind of insane premise that you guys didn't know that any of the other Star Wars movies existed.
That was where the Blank Check idea came from, though.
Yes,
if you listen back, it's really. We've changed a lot over the 2 years that we've been doing this now, which is nuts.
Congratulations.
But so Ready Player One gets pushed back, and then it's just on deadline or whatever. Oh, Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep signed on for some Steven Spielberg movie, and they're just going to shoot it right now, and it's just going to come out in December.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of directors who could pull something like that out of the
bag. No, and David, you'll be up more today on this than I am, because Spielberg's done this a couple times where he'll release two movies in the same year, like Schindler's List and Jurassic Park, which is the most insane double bill imaginable. Munich, War of the Worlds, I think, and then Tintin and War Horse.
I call it the 3 and 2.
Okay. All right. You just start talking.
So it's in 97, you had Lost World, then Amistad, and then in 98, Saving Private Ryan.
That's
so that's 3 and 2 years. He does it again in 01, 02 with AI, Minority Report, and Catch Me If You Can.
Okay. Right.
And then in 2004, 2005, he does Terminal, War of the Worlds in Munich.
That's so
crazy. Then
he
did it again in 2011, 2012. He does War Horse, Tintin, and Lincoln. So he works in these like bursts.
And then he takes like 4 years off.
Yeah,
or
and then he'll
4 years
take some
until
time.
The next release.
And it's always some mix of like a sort of serious, heady picture, maybe historical. Now these days he likes to work with Tony Kushner.
Yeah.
So, you know, Kushner wrote Munich, he wrote Lincoln, he's writing this new movie that Spielberg's attached to about like a pope. Mark Rylance is going to be in it. And then you've got some sort of big genre work like Minority Report or Tintin or something, right? And then something like this, some sort of like, you know, nice hefty drama.
Yeah.
Like,
what is your favorite Spielberg mode?
I mean, in classic Spielberg, I love Spielberg like the populist entertainer, right? Like Raiders, E.T., what we've been sort of thinking about as we do this miniseries is how bad he gets at that once he gets the DreamWorks gig and once he's sort of reached the apex of his career. Like when he tries to give you The Terminal or Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, where he's like, you know, I'll dip back into like
David,
the Spielberg magic,
Tintin,
the BFG.
Tintin is so good.
I love Tintin. That's different. I do like Tintin.
Because of the whole mocap thing? Like
Tintin's just weird.
It's a weird movie.
Also, it's about like a teenager who's a reporter and he has a gun.
And a dog. Yeah,
he's friends with an alcoholic sea captain.
But sounds pretty normal to me.
It's just like these movies are so melancholy or the tone's just off. And so I like Spielberg best recently in this sort of melancholy mode. Like I love AI.
Yeah.
I love Munich. I love Bridge of Spies. Just wait, guys. Just wait for a Bridge of Spies episode.
Oh, I'm excited.
You've never heard two 20-something-year-old boys. I'm 30 now, actually. But, you know, two late 20s, early 30s boys so excited about Bridge of Spies.
Yeah, I think I love history nerd Spielberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my
But that's
favorite.
Also Amistad Spielberg, you know? It sometimes comes back to bite you.
Well,
yeah.
I don't hate Amistad, sorry.
Ooh.
The thing about Amistad, and that I think is our shortest episode of the miniseries, just because we're like You know.
Well, you also started with The Lost World. It was like really rough there.
But with Amistad, you're like, oh, he wanted to make Lincoln when you're watching it. And when you see Lincoln, you're like, this is maybe a little better. Like, you can't approach, Spielberg can't really approach the topic of slavery from the perspective of the slaves and make a movie that feels particularly successful. That's sort of the problem with Amistad.
But I will forever thank Amistad for giving us Jimon Hounsou, who has not necessarily always delivered on that promise that we saw in Amistad, but that is just like a really good introductory performance from an actor.
It's true, one of his many finds. But the best things in Amistad are the courtroom scenes, are like Hopkins and the mutton chops, just
And that's
15 minutes of talking.
And that's why I love Lincoln so much. It's just like you get all these people who are like in there grinding out history and like yelling at each other in their mutton chops. And it's like, it's what's good about Bridge of Spies is when you have Tom Hanks as this guy with a cold who's like trying to do spy
work.
And it's what makes me excited about the Pentagon or the Post, because it's going to be like Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep like in an office late at night. It's going to be like Spotlight, like them kind of like hunched over a desk being like, oh.
And I want to talk about this weird, I don't know, web that's forming in my head, which is that Jason Robards won an Oscar for playing Ben Bradley in All the President's Men. Mm-hmm. Spotlight had Ben Bradley Jr. played by John Slattery. True. So won the Oscar. So I'm going to call it sort of like the Ben Bradley
effect.
Dynasty Oscar glow.
That's
what I've decided to call it.
So, David, having looked so much at Spielberg in depth, do you feel like he's gotten over the Oscar chasing thing that drove him in the 80s? Or like if he really comes back in with another contender, is he just going to go for it?
I think it's interesting. It's for one, I think he has in general gotten over the Oscar chasing thing because he just never seems that worked up about like when Munich gets right. He never thinks he's going to win anymore. Maybe with Lincoln. But even with Lincoln, I feel like the campaign was so subdued.
Yeah. And then that movie made like $150 million domestic. Like just kind of
walked
on the power of being great.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, you can't deny the guy's making a movie about the Washington Post with Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks. So it's not like he's switching over to. I feel like Spielberg's larger concern, and he seems to express this in interviews over and over again now, is he hates blockbuster culture, which he invented. And I feel like he holds himself, maybe doesn't hold himself responsible, but is sort of annoyed at like how cheaply and, you know, the sort of formula that gets pumped out now.
It's like James Cameron looking at the Terminator sequels and being like, I didn't intend this.
Exactly. And James Cameron bitches about it a lot, too. And he, you know, is always bemoaning like the lack of the serious, like mid-budget adult drama. So I feel like that's what he's obsessed with making over and over again now. And when he's making a blockbuster like he's making Ready Player One, I guess he's trying to go for something different. I mean,
well, Indiana Jones 5 is also still like, I mean, they keep like re-promising what's happening.
Well, the thing with that one is it seems like it's like George Lucas won't be involved, right? That's like the selling point for all these Lucasfilm properties.
Yeah.
Like rebooting them. It's like, well, George Lucas won't be involved.
Yeah, poor George.
I know. Because it seems like that was so much of the problem with Crystal Skull was George Lucas insisted on like
I don't believe that George Lucas has the power to like overrule Spielberg and be like, no, this is a great idea. I feel like Spielberg is still the more powerful in that pair.
You'd think so.
I mean, George is richer.
George, probably. Well,
right?
Who's richer? I don't know, man. Spielberg's produced a lot of movies.
I think George is richer.
He probably is.
And George has more technical ownership over the Indiana Jones property, right? Like,
at least he did.
Before the sale. Yeah. But so that's what I mean is like Steven might be tempted to defer to that, especially since like when they worked in the original films. I don't know. I'm writing Lucas Spielberg fan fiction at this point. So.
That's what literally the entire Blank Check series began as.
That is true. It's funny. I would be interested to hear what Steven Spielberg thought of Moonlight, for example, or La La Land. I don't know what he thinks of the current sort of kind of Oscar favorite, which I feel like is often a smaller movie, right? Like this more recent trend where it's like there's almost no mid-budget, critically acclaimed Hollywood studio movies anymore.
Yeah.
So instead, although the one that smaller movies gets plucked out.
But Lincoln got beaten by Argo, which is exactly that.
I bet he liked Argo.
I'm sure he liked
Argo.
That
was a Spielberg movie. Yeah.
Spielberg is worth about $2 billion fewer, or that less than George Lucas is.
Wow.
He's at $3.7 billion and Lucas is at 5 point something.
Wait, that's crazy how both of those figures are crazy.
That's according to Google. Who
sure.
Knows? What?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. Well, guys.
Well, the thing
is, that's significantly more money than I have.
You know what? That's more than I'm making a year.
You just counted it up in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing is, George Lucas sold Lucasfilm, right? So he got a huge chunk of change for that.
Yeah.
Whereas, I mean, one of the things that's interesting is DreamWorks didn't work. in the end. Like, that's his failure, if it is a failure. And that's not really Spielberg's fault, maybe. But the problem with DreamWorks had was you can't just start a studio, a major studio, because you're not making any money on your old movies. You know, like, the advantage that Warner Brothers and Universal and Fox and stuff are always going to have is, like, you just got this endless library that you're collecting on.
Yeah.
And with DreamWorks, you know, you had to, like, pump some stuff out fast. And
yeah, that's, like, how Sony started, just by them buying the MGM library.
Right.
And, like, that's what made them profitable until, like, now.
Who knows what's going on there? But his attempt to start a studio, set the creative direction of a major Hollywood organ, didn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, it didn't completely flop. DreamWorks made a lot of cool movies. And
it's still around in some capacity.
Still around,
right?
In some capacity.
They do TV.
They do TV. I feel like the BFG, though, is the last DreamWorks Spielberg movie. Or maybe it wasn't even a DreamWorks movie.
Yeah.
It's Disney, right?
It was Disney, but I think they partnered with it. Does, oh, okay. You know, now there's Amblin. You know, he's, like, gone back to Amblin, his old production house.
Which is kind of cool.
It is. I mean, who doesn't love that logo with the E.T.? But what do you guys think? I mean, like, do you guys think Steven Spielberg can win another Oscar?
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah.
Totally.
I think yes. I think probably closer to the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
Than right now.
How old is he?
I was just about to look this up. I think he's like
60-something.
He just turned 70.
So
in the end of last year. So, Richard, when you say he'll probably win an Oscar at the end of his career, that's within the next 10 years.
Yeah,
probably.
No, it could be. I didn't realize he was quite that old. So, yeah, I mean, maybe it'll be for the Pentagon Papers. Just kidding.
Look, the Pentagon Papers might be a better name than The Post.
But I think there already is a movie with that name.
There was a documentary for sure. Yeah. I believe it was even Oscar nominated.
Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I think the thing with Spielberg, too, is that, like you said earlier, David, he's maybe a little taken for granted.
Yes.
You know, and I wonder if in doing this podcast, this series rather, on Spielberg, have you learned anything new about him that you kind of, or have any preconceived, like, rewatching these movies and talking about him so much, do you think differently about him than you did before?
I think the fact that he, when you watch these movies all in a row, there's always things that come out at us when we do this. Like, you realize that every Wachowski movie is basically about, like, human bodies being used as batteries in some way or other.
Right.
And every M. Night Shyamalan movie is about how he secretly kind of wants to be a Catholic. It's just that, like, when you take it all in full, even the bad ones like The Terminal, there's this, like, melancholy edge he gains after 9/11 and just never really lets go of.
Mm-hmm.
And especially movies like Minority Report, like Munich, that he has such a suddenly... and even War of the Worlds, like, this askance eye at government, at, like, sort of the idea of national unity. Like, he's become a weird sort of a pessimist. And even a movie like Lincoln, which is, like, the most Spielberg-y movie he's made in the last 20 years, right? Would you agree?
Yeah.
I mean, like...
The most history buff Spielberg-y.
Yeah. But, you know, it's got, like, the sort of soaring John Williams score, mm-hmm. and it's got kind of the way too cheesy ending. Like, you know, it's a great movie with some... He's overplaying his hand sometimes. Even that is about, like, the gunk of government and Lincoln sort of having to try and cut through, you know, all this racism, but also, like, obfuscation. And he has to do it sort of somewhat extra legally. Like, there's just this weird political edge to so much of his work post. I think it really is post 9/11.
Yeah.
Because Saving Private Ryan, that is a movie that is about the Greatest Generation, right? Just, like, the sacrifice that people made in World War II. And even though it has, like, a slightly cynical edge to it, like, a little bit, like,
it's pretty,
you know, it's a flag waving, you know, saluting the grave, really straightforward movie. And I feel like he's never been able to do that again. And then, Joanna, I know you like the BFG.
I do.
But even that movie, which is literally about a beloved childhood friend who makes dreams.
Yeah.
It's just weirdly melancholy, and it doesn't quite get to whatever sort of old-fashioned, cheerful vibe he was looking for.
Well, I think that Ready Player One, in that vein, will be interesting, because that is about an old man who has created this huge, like, world of wonderment,
right,
and then wants to bequeath it to somebody.
Yeah,
and it's sort of a dystopia, right? Like, it's sort of set in a slightly deteriorated future,
and then a virtual reality kind of existence.
That's
as well.
A good point, though. And is Rylance playing that guy? Because I know Rylance is in the cast of Ready Player One, and I assumed he was
that guy, but I don't know for sure.
I can't imagine who else. It's been a while since I read the book, Joanne. I think you know the book pretty well, don't you?
I think Rylance is playing that character.
It's crazy how Rylance just became Spielberg's
guy.
Avatar.
All of a sudden,
just like that. Now I think Spielberg's like, this guy's got to be in everything I make, and he's always this, like, even in Bridge of Spies, he's this sort of disgruntled artist. Like, that character, this, you know, there's that great line when, I think it's when they're in court and he's getting convicted, and Tom Hanks is like, is your boss going to be mad? And he's like, you know, the boss isn't always right, but he's always the boss. And it's like this weird sort of resigned thinking about like business and, you know, the world around you. And I don't know. Rylance is like the king of that for him all of a sudden.
Yeah. Rylance is playing the James Halliday character.
Yeah. The cast of Ready Player One is actually way better than I was giving them credit. Ben Mendelsohn's in there. Cool. Simon Pegg is in there. Ty Sheridan is playing the main character, which I had forgotten about. TJ Miller's got a supporting part.
Oscar hopeful TJ Miller.
If Jonah Hill got two nominations, CJ Miller can stretch one.
Literally anything is possible. Should we wrap this just by doing our favorite post Oscar Spielberg, like everything after Schindler's List, which I think knocks out Jurassic Park, but you can tell me if Jurassic Park counts or not, David.
It does not. That's free Schindler's List.
All right. Well, David, you surely have yours ready.
AI. Artificial intelligence.
The AI episode is really good because I think you guys really clearly state what you think is important about that movie. And your guest, remind me his name.
David Reese. He's a great guest.
Great guest. I think my favorite so far.
Well, what about Richard Lawson?
What about Joanna Robinson?
Well, what about Katie and Charlie Rich?
Who have not been invited back since I brought a baby to the podcast.
No, please come back. Anytime.
I demanded to be on the Titanic episode, and then I brought a baby, and it went as you would expect.
It was terrific.
I think mine's Lincoln. I love that movie, which I saw the first time, and I was like, it's fine. And then I saw it again, and I was like, oh, this is a masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen it in a while, but I think of it fondly often.
Rewatch it.
Yeah, it seems super rewatchable.
Good for right now, especially that stuff with Tommy Lee Jones just yelling and swearing at other congressmen. Just really, really love to soak in that.
Although I feel like watching Congress people get it together achieve and something. Do the right thing and achieve something and just it might be too depressing.
What about you guys?
I rewatched it because it was on your podcast, and Catch Me If You Can. I think that's a really exquisite movie.
It really is.
And it's the movie that I think it's the best Leonardo DiCaprio's ever been. And it reminded me, I think I said this to you, David, over text or something, that when he's focused on it, Spielberg is a real actor's director. He can get great performances out of people.
And sometimes he's not, weirdly. But I think Lincoln, he is. There's some movies he is, but it's true. He really gets wonderful performances out of people.
Yeah, Catch Me If You Can is on TBS or something. I hope it's on cable a lot.
It's on HBO Go right now.
I got big time sucked in. It was right around Christmas. It was airing and it's a Christmas movie. And it was one of the things I was like, oh, I'm going to cook dinner. And then never did. Just watched Catch Me If You Can.
Walking Amy Adams.
Yeah.
Joanna, what's your favorite?
Oh, I'm going to continue my streak of unpopular Spielberg opinions and say Minority Report. Probably just because I rewatched it to talk to you guys about it.
It's a great movie.
It's so good. It's just really... technically proficient and beautiful, and a really good Tom Cruise performance. So
it's also really satisfying to watch that movie, see Colin Farrell, and then just skip ahead to now and be like, oh, that's the promise he showed Minority Report. Right. Nothing bad happened between now and then.
He had some fallow patches.
But I remember seeing that movie and being like, who is that? I'd never seen him before, didn't know anything about him, didn't know he was Irish. I was totally blown away.
That's what I'm talking about with Jimon Hunsu. I need him to find better projects and not do...
Is he in Guardians 2?
Guardians,
no, he got his head ripped open in Guardians 1. He won't be back.
Shows my memory.
You know who else is an Amistad? His first ever screen performance, at least American screen, is Chiwetel Ejiofor. This young man, Anthony Hopkins, they slapped some mutton chops.
Chiwetel Ejiofor is in Amistad?
Excellent in Amistad.
Oh, God, he's had a much longer career than anyone ever
remembers. He is deceptively old. Yeah. He looks great and he's doing great work, but that's 20 years in the biz now for Chiwetel. What's he up to?
Did I just see him in?
Isn't he doing the
Doctor Strange. He's great in Doctor Strange.
Oh, he was great in Doctor Strange. I think he was maybe going to be in that Steve McQueen TV show for HBO that
didn't go.
That didn't go and is apparently sort of looking for a new place to be. I read some article
he's
that
in
it was
something
not dead,
with
exactly.
Lakeith Stanfield, who was really great in Get Out.
Keith Stanfield's that guy's a star.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
I met him at a party once. He was very nice and very handsome.
Should have been awesome.
Little Goldman is the best home for people Richard met at a party stories.
Oh my God. Most of Richard's I met them at a party stories break my heart because it's someone I like, and Richard's like, that person's very rude to me. So I'm delighted to hear a good one.
I think I'm projecting a lot onto these people. They're probably just acting normal. I'm like, they were terrible because they're not giving me a hug.
Richard.
Well, David, thank you for coming and giving us an excuse to geek out about Steven Spielberg.
Anytime.
We'll have you back on when his next film, The Pentagon Papers, is released in theaters.
If they changed the title of that movie and we incepted it, I'm taking credit.
They could happen, and you should take all the credit in the world. I've been listening to this podcast since the first episode, I think. I'm sure.
I didn't realize that Little Gold Men and Blank Check are basically the same age. So happy 2 years to all of us.
And yes. Give your co-host a kiss on the forehead from all of us.
He's making the tick right now. Everybody check out the tick.
Star of television, Griffin Newman.
Yep. He's working like 24 hours a day. He's being a superhero. He's a moth. He's a flying moth man.
Is that what he is?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy.
That does it for this week's Little Gold Men. Thank you so much for listening. And keep rating and review us on iTunes, even when we're not giving away Blu-rays. We really appreciate it. And we love hearing from you on Twitter, too. We're all at Little Gold Men and on VanityFair.com. And you can follow us all on our own on Twitter. I'm at Katie Rich. Richard.
Rylaws.
And Joanna.
Joe wrote this.
And David, our guest, is at David Elson. So don't leave him out. This episode was edited and produced by Alana Milner, and thanks to Laura Mayer and Andy Bowers at Panoply. And this week's award for the best Obamacare replacement goes to David Sims.
Human bodies being used as batteries in some way or other.
Right.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.